today on Rambling About Cars. You want coupe SUVs? We got coupe SUVs. You want hypercars? We've got hypercars. You want teasers? Okay, we've got one of those too. Yeah. We've got Genesis. We've got Porsche. We've got Aston Martin. We've got Subaru. So let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Mr. Chris Bruce is across the way. Welcome, Bruce. Welcome, Ramblers. Welcome, everybody.
Any cool car stuff going on with you at the moment?
Nope.
Okay, then. You see, Smith, with improv, you're supposed to do yes and. It's yes and. But that's okay. Nope is an acceptable response. So.
It's been a day. I take that back. I put the roof up on the Mustang over lunch.
Okay. Well, that 30 seconds, probably less than 30 seconds, is car worthy. Yeah. I have a second bay open in my garage finally. So all of the cars are living in the garage. So I can't exactly say that I'm, you know, doing a whole lot better than you, but I got two cars in the garage now, two cars in a two car garage. So.
Okay, living. Nothing is in the driveway?
Nothing is in the driveway.
Oh, my friend, that's space. That's space for something else. What's a driveway for other than to park project cars in, right?
Isn't this an old Seinfeld bit? Why do we drive on a parkway and park on a driveway?
No, that was a Gallagher thing, I think, wasn't it?
Gallagher? Okay.
Way back. Yeah.
Gallagher.
Yeah. R.I.P. Gallagher. Ramblers, how's everybody doing out there in Rambling Land? We got Ted Adam Green in the house. Let's rock and roll and ramble away.
Yeah. Ramblers, have you done something cool with your cars recently in the past week that you want to tell us about? Because Smith and I haven't. So.
We've got Group FBC here. Morning, Efron. Eric Efron, everybody's in the house. Sup, Ted? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And hey, good. Wherever you're at, wherever you're listening, if you're new right now, you can join these ramblers here in the discussion, whether you're at Motor One on Facebook, Motor One Com, Twitter, Motor One Com, Facebook. You can type in your comments. It all comes into us right here on our live little screen, and we can all respond in kind, in time. All the good stuff, and for our FBC, audio,
buddy, you have no reason to feel ashamed at all. I cleaned my car for the first time in 2 years. My head is hanging in shame. I'm hoping you mean the inside of your car, because outside, I don't know what things are like in Australia, but we have, I mean, literally for me, I've got like three car washes within 5 minutes I could get to, so I can go through a car wash anytime I want. But that inside stuff is, it takes some extra work. So, yeah.
Well, hey, you're still ahead of me. You're still ahead of me. Last weekend, what did I do last weekend? I was working here in the, I was doing some home renovation. I was trying to get the basement stairs, some walls up around the basement stairs. I'm going to have an electrician come in and put a bunch of stuff down here because turns out I've got a little bit of a scale model museum down here now, and I need more power for stuff. We're lighting everything up, we're plugging everything in. I'm gonna be
FBC. Sadly, no, I mean the outside. Yeah, but you live in Australia. I, as far as I know, hey, I could be wrong here, you guys don't get snow there, you don't get salt on your roads there, so there's much less of a thing.
It's September, we don't have it, hasn't snowed around here yet.
Yeah, but it's going to within 3-4 weeks.
I bet it's going to be longer than that. Well, I guess it depends on where you're at. I mean, you get way up in the mountains, right? But
you're
it's going to be 80
degrees. Lower Michigan?
It's going to be 80 degrees Fahrenheit for me this weekend.
I think it's going to be cooler than that for me, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Head north. Hey.
I guess so. Head north to get warmer. That's a weird concept.
It just occurred to me, we have a podcast and we have things to talk about.
We do. Yeah. No, buddy, come on. We were letting people come in.
Giving people a chance
a little bit,
giving our audio listeners who we still love. If you can't join us here live on video, we still love hearing that you're listening to us every Fridays when we go up on Spotify, on Apple, on
Google, on
Deezer,
Amazon,
Deezer, yeah, Deezer, iHeartRadio. Oh, and email us podcast@motor1.com. We've been a little light on emails. We do have one we're going to read here a little bit later on in the episode. But yeah, shoot us your emails. Last week we were saying, hey, those of us here in the Northern Hemisphere, we're moving into autumn. We're coming into some color season. I'm hoping to have some color photos this weekend. I had some plans that switched around, so I'm doing something else.
So before we get to your trees aren't changing there yet? Because I'm getting some
gold
and yellows and...
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's, I mean, it's not peak for me
yet, far, but
I head a little bit north and it's going to be pretty close to peak.
Yeah,
and instead of going south, I'm actually going north for my little extended weekend. So I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, podcast@motor1.com. Are you taking autumn color tours? Take photos and send them. We want to see them. We want to share them with all the ramblers. I'd love to see them,
especially just all over the world, all over the country, just whatever, because... Even me, there are a lot of like gold and yellows. We're not quite getting to that orange stuff yet, but we're probably a few weeks away from the oranges, but golds and yellows are all over the place.
Yep. I've got gold. I've got red popping around here with a fair amount of green. I've got a lot of acorns. I've got acorns everywhere this year in the backyard.
Yep. Well, let's get this thing started. Let's talk about... kind of in terms of traffic, one of our bigger debuts of the week. It's an interesting car, and that is the Lexus. Why did I just say Lexus? The Genesis GV80 Coupe, and technically also an updated GV80 non-coupe debuted at the same time. We're going to focus on the coupe, but kind of whatever we talk about, the changes apply to them both. And this is, it just debuted in South Korea today as we're recording the show.
Yeah.
We do not know 1000% for certain. Absolutely. It's going to come to North America. We're pretty sure it's going to come to North America because it's a major market for Genesis and they kind of send a lot of their stuff here. And yeah, it's, you know, it's the coupified version of the GV80. And you can see in some of the photos we have here, we also have the non-coupe version. But some big changes are afoot. And among them is that you can now get, let me get the size right. I believe it's 24 inches. It's 24 inches, right?
27. You're talking about that big Mondo screen up there in the front. That is a big 27-inch screen. That you get inside for the GV80, that's on the coupe and that's on the regular SUV, which, I mean, this is a refresh for the standard Genesis GV80 SUV.
It is indeed.
But this is the first time we've seen the coupe. Of course, we saw the coupe concept earlier this year.
We saw it in April. And it's based, this is almost exactly like the concept.
I was going to say.
The concept was barely a concept.
It's a concept. The concept had just like, two bucket seats in the back instead of a three row bench that we have. And sorry, by three row, I mean, you sit three people in one bench seat. Three abreast. This isn't a three row SUV. This is a two row. But yeah, the coupe concept just had two seats there in the back, two seats in the front. This has the second row bench where you can sit three people abreast. There's also a 14.6 inch screen that's just for the rear seat passengers that's available.
And that's
larger than you get in a lot of Vehicles just up front. So
absolutely. And going for three powertrain choices. So there is,
I love this,
turbocharged 2.5 liter four cylinder, and that makes 300 horsepower, 311 pound-feet of torque. There is a twin turbocharged 3.5 liter V6, and that makes 375 horsepower and 390.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, there's one more.
But wait, there's more. It's not just one more. There's more. Tell them, Bruce.
Yeah.
This is cool.
You can get a version with an electric supercharger in addition to that turbo. And that version makes 409 horsepower, 405 pound feet of torque.
I mean, it's a little more power, but who doesn't want the turbo supercharged Genesis?
Right.
Turbo super turbo and supercharged.
Exactly.
I mean,
that was, yes. Is it supercharged? Yes.
Yes. It's got both. Which is it?
It's got all of them.
It's got both. We pressurize down low with the supercharger until the turbos kick in and take it away. I'm trying to remember my aircraft history, and I feel a little ashamed that I'm not remembering it better, but I'm fairly certain there were World War II aircraft that utilized turbochargers and superchargers.
Yes.
Turbo supercharged engines.
Yes. I believe both on the German side and on the British side, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. And I mean, what a thing to offer on a vehicle. I mean, it's not a huge power increase to get the electric supercharger, but it's... I just love seeing it's turbo supercharged, right? Well, you could have both. Yeah, yes, you can. Because I mean, technically, well, in a regular supercharged system, you get the supercharger is belt driven, the turbochargers are exhaust driven. So yeah, they both work.
And you've got to hear this. I want to say how cool the center console looks, where it's got, there's just like all sorts of metal, and it's got different textures to like different areas. We're looking at it now for anyone watching on YouTube or for anyone watching the video version. It's just a really slick look in terms of interior design. Like slick is how I would call it. I can't really think of a better word than that. Of, you know, there's polished elements, there's matte elements, there's kind of this fractal element. It's just kind of all a bunch of things at one time, and it looks pretty damn cool to me.
I really enjoy the design direction that Genesis is taking with all of their vehicles. The GV80, I think, looks almost fantastic inside. I'll be honest, I don't like the 27-inch screen, not because of the size.
Really? Why?
But this is a design trend that I've seen with a few automakers.
Smith, I'm going to interrupt you for just a hot second here. Tell me this does not look like Johnny Five. Short Circuit.
Oh my God. I was about to say that they got Johnny Five in there.
Like
that. I haven't seen that movie in decades. I'm scared to watch it because I remember it fondly when I was young.
There's a weird intimate scene between a robot and Ally Sheedy. And it's weird even to think about now.
Oh, I'm afraid to watch it now because I'm pretty sure it's just not going to hold up well. And two, I'm going to be like, this isn't nearly as good as I remember it. So I think that memory needs to stay in my childhood.
A memory, exactly.
I encountered the same thing with the movie PCU from 90.
I have not seen that. 92, 93. Yeah, I was 92 in my head, but
like a high schooler getting ready to go to college, watching that movie. Awesome. I watched it again like 10 years later, and it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
No, it just doesn't fly anymore. Totally. Anyways, back to Genesis, what I was talking about.
Yes, sir.
The 27-inch screen, I mean, it's just the square screen. It's situated tablet style there on the dash. It just doesn't feel like it's really integrated. It feels like somebody at Genesis said, let's take a 27-inch screen and put it in the car. But we're just going to set it up there. I mean, it looks like it's just kind of sitting on the dash, and that's, I know that's like the floating style, and that's a trend that some automakers are taking, but it looks like an afterthought to me. It doesn't look like something that was thought of ahead of time and then integrated smartly. I mean, it's integrated, it's in there. It's not like they just stuck it on with Velcro, but it just doesn't. The rest of the interior looks so well proportioned and thought out.
Yeah.
And the screen just looks like it's just sitting there. And I feel a little let down by it.
I agree and I disagree with you at the same time. I agree that the screen, I like the big screen, but I agree it looks like an afterthought once you look at kind of the lower displays and stuff like that.
Yes, exactly.
So well integrated. Like it looks like a late 80s, early 90s hi-fi setup to me, where, you know, it's well integrated and it looks very handsome there. And that's not the image I wanted. This is the image I wanted. So for anyone looking here, that lower screen, it reminds me of like an old school Sony or like Panasonic early-ish 1990s hi-fi setup where you're selecting things. It's really handsome, and it seems really well thought out, and it doesn't quite match with the screen that's above it, at least in my opinion. And kind of seems like in your opinion too.
Yep. When you look at other styling cues in the interior, choosing that style for the screen, it draws attention in an unwelcome way. Thanks for sharing the comment there from Group FBC. The other issue with the screens is no matter what they do, there will be times when reflections make them utterly unreadable. I do like having the screen, you know, kind of just set back a little bit where there's a little bit of a lip over top. I think that really helps with the reflections. This just looks like it's sitting out there in the open.
Yep. Totally agree. But yeah, we have no pricing information about this vehicle. We know it's coming. Obviously it's going to debut in South Korea first. And it's going to go on sale there very soon. And by very soon, I mean, October 11th. So like 2 weeks from now.
Oh yeah. 2 weeks, 2 weeks from now. That's right.
Yeah. It's
right around the corner.
Yeah. So, you know, and then eventually it will trickle out to other markets. We do not know for certain whether it's coming to North America. We're pretty sure it's coming to North America because this is not the type of vehicle that they would, you know, make South Korean only or, you know, Europe only or something like
that. And the GV80, if nothing else, the standard GV80 is here.
Absolutely. That too.
And it certainly makes sense to have the coupe here as well. And
yeah.
As we get more information, you know where to go, motor1.com.
That's right.
We've got it all right there for you to read and peruse. And you can bet that when there is a debut for North America, we'll talk about it here too.
That's right. So moving on to another high-end SUV. This one's a little bit more performance-oriented than the Genesis. And this is, deep breath, the Porsche Cayenne SE Hybrid, which is now the middle child in the lineup. We talked about another Cayenne fairly recently. And sorry, I am vamping for myself here as I try to pull up with the photos.
I can totally vamp for you because I wrote the piece. I did have to reread it because I couldn't even remember that I wrote it. And that was just, a couple days ago. So
like that's 3-4 days ago. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, ooh, I better reread the Cayenne thing here just to make sure. Oh, I wrote this. All right. It's the middle child, with the, I guess, younger or smaller brother being just the Cayenne e-hybrid. And then the one that we talked about recently, the Cayenne Turbo e-hybrid. This one fits right in the middle, not too spicy, not too mild, just right. If you follow sort of thing, what does that mean?
Exactly. You have to put it in Porsche terms because like if this were, you know, another vehicle, you'd be like, oh, it's the middle child. I don't necessarily want this one.
Middle child still has 512 horsepower.
Exactly. 512 horsepower, 553 pound-feet of torque from a turbocharged 3-liter V6 with an electric motor. And it will hit 60 in 4.4 seconds, and it'll do the quarter mile in 13 seconds flat.
And that's a little bit quicker than just the regular Cayenne S in a quarter mile. I didn't have the top speed in the article, but I did look it up online. Top speed is 163 miles an hour. So yeah, that's your middle of the road Cayenne SE hybrid, which would be probably a range topper for performance with a lot of other automakers. Of course, the range topper with Porsche is the 729 horsepower turbo E hybrid. That's just insane. Yeah. And then on the other end, and mind you, we're talking about the e-hybrid world. You can still get regular versions of the Cayenne as well. The standard Porsche Cayenne e-hybrid is only, with my air quotes, 463 horsepower. So yeah, you have 463 horsepower, 729. This one in the middle at 512. Of course, it's still all-wheel drive. It's got the 8-speed Tiptronic transmission, all kinds of standard equipment. It's got the Sport Chrono Package standard, the 2-chamber suspension standard. You can get it either has the standard SUV or in the sleeker coupe styling. They both have the same performance metrics. The coupe will come standard with black trim.
I was going to say, you have to pay a bit more for the coupe. The standard model after destination, that's $101,750. If you're, you know, I want that coupe version, that's $105,650.
So, a literal price to pay for the style, a literal.
Yeah, because otherwise they're, you know, in terms, all the powertrains are the same. All of the interior appointments are the same. You just have to pay a bit more if you want less space. Does that make sense? I don't know.
That's what I said. You're literally paying for the style because technically you are getting less vehicle. You're getting less space inside. Which when you're talking about a sport utility, okay, there's the sport section and then there's the utility section. So you're getting a little bit more sport, a little bit less utility. Haven't we had this discussion before, Bruce, where where it's like, you know, I think I wouldn't go for the coupe. I would go for just the regular SUV because I give up that space.
Yeah, I can't think of a logical reason for going for the coupe. You know, maybe an emotional reason of like, I like that sleeker rear end. But if I could pay less money and have more storage space, I don't know why I just wouldn't do that.
And can we just acknowledge Group FBC saying this is the Jan Brady of Cayennes? I got to be honest, as I was writing the story, and then as I socialed it online, I had middle child in my head. Yeah. I was thinking about the Brady Bunch.
It's, you know, but it's even more
turbo.
Marsha. Yeah.
Oh, I hate myself today.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine, buddy. I obviously Porsche sells the coupe version because there are people out there to buy them. You and I, mm-hmm. Smith, we are not consumers of that vehicle, and I'm not going to judge someone that buys that.
Oh no, not at all.
I don't know why you pay more to get slightly less.
I mean, it's all about the look and the styling. I guess some people might feel, well, an SUV is a little too stuffy, like a family vehicle, but this is a coupe. This is my sporty SUV. I just don't understand the argument, but that's okay. I don't have to understand the argument to appreciate that it's there, that it's a valid opinion, and I welcome it. It's just not really my thing. I don't think there's any coupe. I take that back. I'm gonna just become my own hypocrite because I think I'd take the GV80 coupe over the GV80. The GV80 coupe, I think has some pretty smart styling. The GV80 in SUV format is all right. I won't say it looks awkward, but like the Cayenne here, the Porsche in regular SUV guys, I think it looks fantastic as it is.
I will agree the Porsche looks fantastic, and I would take the regular GV80 over the coupe.
That's fair.
Inspired SUV thing has never quite made sense to me, but I understand that they exist and they sell enough, you know, BMW, Mercedes, Porsche, Genesis.
Everybody wouldn't be doing it, right?
Exactly. There's clearly a market for it. I just don't necessarily understand it. So it is what it is.
Just offer it a little bit for everybody. You know, Porsche, they do have a lot of information out. One thing that we don't have yet, though, because this is a hybrid, it does have a 25.9 kilowatt hour battery. Porsche says you can fully charge it up on a level 2 charger in a couple hours. But there's no mention of electric range yet. And I actually contacted Porsche directly because we haven't had this yet for any of the new e-hybrids.
Right.
That information will come closer to when it goes into production. Or closer to deliveries, they said, and that's going to be next spring. And I find it a little odd. Am I placing an order for a plug-in hybrid vehicle where I don't necessarily know what my electric only range is going to be?
For the turbo,
who cares? I'm getting the turbo for the performance.
Also buying a Porsche, like, At what point do you start to care? Like,
I think at $100,000, I mean, that's still pricey, but at $100,000, we're getting jaded, Bruce. How many vehicles cost, you know, right around the six figure mark there? And they're not extraordinary or fantastic. They're just vehicles with a fair amount of features. I mean, this one, 512 horse. I mean, it's certainly no slouch. It's not slow.
No,
but I think you I get mean, that.
You care. I point. Don't own cars that are going to hit 60 in 4 seconds.
Nope. But if I was in this market and I couldn't afford, or I didn't want the ridiculous overpowered e-hybrid turbo with 729 horsepower, hey, 500 will be fine, especially if I know I could do my 20-mile round-trip commute on electric power alone. How cool would that be to have that kind of, you know? I would kind of want to know that. So I found it intriguing enough to contact Porsche directly and say, hey, do you guys have any range figures yet? Not yet. That will come closer to when deliveries begin.
I mean, presumably our job,
next year.
Our job is to be skeptical. We report on cars and we have to be skeptical about every spec, figure, number, whatever that they give us. And we need to ask about them. And that's what we do, ideally. Every day, we are contacting automakers and saying, hey, what about this? Hey, what about that? You know, that's what we are supposed to do. And, you know, that's our job. And that's
how it should be done. Right.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
I was, I guess, maybe a little disappointed. It's like, well, we have all of this other information. What's the holdup here with the range? Unless they're trying to dial something in. Or, I mean, I obviously don't work for Porsche. Maybe their research says, you know what, our buyers aren't really that interested in range. So
I bet they're not.
We won't worry about it that much. We'll hold off. We'll dial it in, and then we'll announce it, you know, when we're absolutely 100% dial in on where we want to be. So in any case, that information will come later. Sounds like probably early next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, here is something we will know about in roughly 10 days from the time you and I are recording this show. For anyone watching on YouTube, it'll be even less, or for anyone listening, I'm sorry, it'll be
we're going to know what Bo is.
What?
I'm looking at this picture that you put up, and I see Bo
on
a red background with a wheel with some kind of weird star pattern in the middle. What is Bo all about?
Bo knows braking.
Bo knows. What is that Bo attached to, Bruce?
So clearly that is a Brembo brake caliper in red. And we can see this wheel. I described it in the post that I wrote about it, that it, to me, these wheels look like they're a light gunmetal, or maybe just a gunmetal in general finish. And these are not wheels you can generally get on the WRX, because this is the new WRX TR. And it is going to debut on October 7th. And Travis Pastrana and Bucky Lasek are going to debut the car. And unfortunately, we don't know a whole lot more than that.
That's why it's a teaser.
Exactly. So here is what Subaru said in their announcement, that it would be a sharper and more enthusiast-focused model of the WRX. And they released this image. And other than that, we just have to speculate for now, unless they release another teaser, until October 7th. But as I put out in the story, you know, the STI is dead. We know that. There's no the STI is not coming back. And what I said was, maybe this is something that, you know, is a little bit of bridging the gap between the WRX and the now defunct STI. Maybe, you know, clearly it's going to have Brembo brakes, because I can't think of another big brake manufacturer who is famous for their red calipers.
With Bo in the back out, Rambo brakes?
Yes, it's got Rambo brakes. That's right.
Or maybe that's Rainbow. Maybe there's a W on the other side.
That's true. I didn't think of that.
Or maybe these are sailboat brakes, B-O-A-T. I'm kind of stretching this one
out. You're real stretching it, yeah. But, you know, so it's going to have a unique set of wheels. We can see these Y-shaped spokes. Like I said, kind of a light gunmetal finish on there. And what I'm fairly certain are Brembo brakes on that as well. And we don't know much more than that, other than that Subaru says, sharper and more enthusiast focused. What does that mean? I don't know.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there a TR at some point in the past where it was kind of like just a more basic performance model that kind of left the door open for upgrades?
I look this up. Wasn't it called the TS?
Was it the TS? It could be. I'll be honest, I'm not that up to speed on some of the WRX and some of the various trims over the years. But I want to say there was some sort of version where it was just kind of like a stripped down.
There was. No, they're totally, I think. And if someone wants to correct me, and if I'm wrong, I will totally accept. I think that was the TS. But again, that's the S and R are right next to each other in the alphabet. So we're not that far off. I will say Phil's got a dog as his avatar. Good for you. I'm going to call you Phil JD. And if you want to pronounce some other way, that's fine. Bo knows rallying. He does. Bo knows rallying.
So we had I'm doing a little bit of Google work here as we're talking.
Sure.
I mean, we do have the WRX TS that's actually available right now. So, this won't be like a TS, I'm assuming.
Presumably not. Otherwise,
am I seeing anything on TR? Yeah, see, everything that I'm getting on TR is just the teaser that we got today. Yeah. So,
No, buddy, I looked it up as I was writing the story. TS exists, to my knowledge, and again, if someone wants to correct me, this would be the first TR, which would obviously be one step beyond TS. Maybe? I don't know.
Well, okay. I've got something here from WRXTuners.com. So shout out to WRXTuners.com.
Okay.
You're popping up on my Google thing today here. This is just a post from somebody from 2010 talking about a TR. The WRX TR hit the market in 2006. Stands for tuner ready, meaning it's a stripped down version of the WRX. Although it had the same 2.5 and 5 speed, it typically came with little to no options, which made the price lower. So maybe my memory isn't entirely. I don't remember it being. I don't associate it with being like some like really cheap model though. I don't know. Well, we'll have to see. But it looks like there may be a precedent for the TR that's coming on October
7th. Yeah, and I tried, I did my best. I tried to look stuff up. I did not see that.
I'm reading this from like some forum from a poster 13 years ago. So it's not, I'm just doing what the average person does here, taking a look at Google.
Okay. But yeah, so
it could be like for just a very specific market somewhere.
But regardless of that, there is a hotter version of the WRX coming. And as I put in the story, the current WRX, it debuted for the 2022 model year. It received no updates for 2023. And so this will be a 2024 model. And so presumably, we don't know this for certain yet, that it's going to be an actual trim level rather than a special edition. We don't know yet. But, the fact that Subaru's finally paying attention to the WRX and making a hotter model, that's pretty cool. Like, anything they do to that model is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I am.
Yep. No, but I'm there. I mean, I've got a Subaru sitting in the garage, so I'm all on board. Group FBC, WRX, TR, ATX, 4AEV.
That's right.
Don't give anyone any ideas, because there might be somebody somewhere thinking we can make one of those. No, 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 no more alphabet soup. People, come up with names.
I would prefer names too, if I'm honest. And
more to come on that. Before we get to the last thing, Bruce, do we want to revisit an email here?
We do. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have it pulled up, or do you want me to pull it up?
I can pull it up here right now. This comes from Ted Adam Green. Thank you for emailing us this. This goes way back to the beginning of September.
It does.
We were, if I remember correctly, we were talking about just car movies and TV shows and things like that.
Yeah. What brought it up was that, you know, I was asking for car movie suggestions and stuff that we might be able to talk about on the podcast, or just kind of stuff that I could watch. And Ted Adam Green, you knocked it out of the park with this one. So
I have yet to look this up, just because I've been very busy. But Ted Adam Green had mentioned, hey, there was a movie called Moon Runners that was kind of like this weird, almost like alternate universe Dukes of Hazzard. So I mean, he sends in the email kind of talking about it. We get in after a fun night of hanging out, talking about just, you know, friends, things, doing things like that. Unwinding, this cheap 1970s movie is on, but then I start to notice something, or rather some name specifically. Bo and Luke, Uncle Jesse, Daisy, The Boar's Nest, and more. That's Dukes of Hazzard stuff. That's, but Dukes, this was Hazzard. Not, yeah. This was not Dukes of Hazzard. This movie is called Moon Runners. And he goes on to say, what the heck? There was no internet to look things up, so we actually started paying attention and trying to figure it out for ourselves. Waylon Jennings, who was the narrator for Dukes of Hazzard, was narrating the movie. It was enough to think you were tripping on something, but all of us were watching, and I don't drink, much less do drugs, but we could have concocted this fever dream alternate version of our beloved car themed TV show. Time passed over the years. We kind of thought it was a group hallucination at times. But yeah, this was an actual movie. It just wasn't really the humorous movie, or the humor sided Dukes of Hazzard that we know. Mm-hmm. This was more of just kind of like a serious Southern family. And you can imagine what Moon Runners stands for, running a little bit of shine.
Sure.
But yeah, thanks for sending that in, Ted. I haven't had a chance to really look into the movie, but I want to see it now. I've got to see what it's about. And yeah, that's why I love rambling about cars. That's why I love the Ramblers. We have the best listeners out there.
Totally. Absolutely. I mean, hell, what was it today? In our chat with Brett Evans, who has been on the show before, we were talking about things, and we ended up getting onto the topic of the IT crowd, or the IT crowd. I've never been sure how you say it. And he did not know that there was an American version of that with Jessica St. Clair, Joel, what's his name? Yeah, there was a very good version of that, and it was one episode, and it's still out there, and you can find it on the Internet Archive, and you can find all sorts of fun stuff there. And yeah, it's worth looking for things there. Recently, like 3-4 months ago, we were talking about Revenge of the Nerds. And that is also, or was also, I don't know if it still is, with our boss, Adrian Padnow, who had never seen that movie before. And so I shared it with him there, and he watched it because he loves 80s stuff, and he got a kick out of it. So, you know, there's all sorts of kind of forgotten movies that are out there, and just because they're forgotten doesn't mean they're bad.
Well, sometimes it does.
Sometimes it does.
Sometimes it's best to leave the past in the past. Hence why I'm not watching Short Circuit, or wasn't there a sequel, Short Circuit 2?
Yes, there was.
I'm absolutely not watching the sequel.
Yeah.
No. I made the mistake of watching Smoking the Bandit 2 about a year ago, and it had been a long time. I've seen Smoking the Bandit a lot. Been a while since I've seen Smoking the Bandit 2. Ugh, bad.
Yeah.
Bad, bad, bad. And I'm not they started dare, making I don't TV dare go after...
movies of Smokey and the Bandit. There's like Smokey and the Bandit 3 and 4, but they played on like TNT or USA or like.
Well, Smokey and the Bandit 3 was a regular movie.
Oh, okay.
But then they went to it was like a they did like a little TV kind of miniseries thing where he was driving a black Dodge Stealth.
I like Some Should Be Forgotten looking at you Smoking the Bandit 3.
What? Jerry Reed and Jackie Gleason like driving around with big sharks on their roofs trying to do some weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great movie. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. But we did get introduced to the new styled Trans Am that I think came out in 1982. We got a good look at that. I don't know if that was the first movie to feature it or not.
It must have been, because I thought that was an 83 model, but with model years, then yeah, that would make sense. So yeah.
So you gotta find the good in everything. Totally. But yeah, hey, email us podcast@motor1.com. You got weird car movies you want to talk about? Email us. We'll look them up. We'll talk about them. We'll have all kinds of fun.
Smith, you and I have talked about doing a weird car movie show for, I think, the entire time the show has been going on. The issue has just been copyright stuff that like we can't figure out how to do it. But if we could figure out how to do it, you and I would love to watch bad car movies and comment over them.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah. What a terrible segue to what should be a really amazing car. From bad car movies to the Aston Martin Valhalla. We got a little more information on Aston Martin's.
Quite a bit more information, actually.
Yeah. Their long-awaited mid-engine supercar. This was first announced. I mean, if you don't consider like the prototype stuff, I think Valhalla was announced in 2019. Mm-hmm. And then in 2021, I think we got an update that, okay, we're not going to do
the prototype.
We're not going to do the V6. We're going to do the V8. Mm-hmm. And you know, then every now and again, we get, you know, a little bit more information. Oh, it should be coming for 2020. Well, now we have some more information. We have some images of the inside. We have some images of the outside. Basically, Aston Martin sent out an announcement kind of saying, the takeaway for me was, hey, we're still working on this thing. It's coming along and we are on track to have the production and delivery start in 2024, which is what we've been hearing for a while. But I mean, they're now kind of putting their foot down and saying, hey, this is happening. And they wanted to talk about some of the development process and, you know, while giving us some photos. And I think it does look fantastic on the outside. Sure, I mean, that hasn't really changed. We're getting a good look at the inside. But they're very keen to say, hey, we're pulling heavily from our experience in Formula One in mm-hmm. developing this car. And for those, and let me just take a little moment for those who don't necessarily remember what this car is all about. Mid-engine.
Yes.
4-liter twin turbo flat plane crank V8 spinning to who knows how high, but no. But wait, there's more. It's a hybrid, so it's got that twin turbo V8 with 3 electric motors, one for each front wheel, so that's 2, and then an integrated motor in the transmission for the third motor. Mm-hmm. All combined, Aston Martin is saying 998 horsepower. Mm-hmm. I suspect I didn't do any conversions. I suspect that's metric horsepower since this is coming straight from Aston Martin. So SAE is probably going to be a little bit lower, but I mean, we're still talking.
Well, yeah, barely.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit lower. And if memory serves me correct, I think the last time we heard anything specific about the Valhalla, it was more around 930, 940. So power's up a little bit. Hey, if you're making a crazy, expensive, crazy, exclusive hypercar, keep taking it up, right?
Sure.
One little bit of information that I don't know if we had before, but we have now. They were talking just about some of the ways in which they were saving weight. The transmission doesn't have a reverse gear.
We've seen that from other automakers recently too.
The electric motors, and specifically they said the front wheels, you know, the electric motors in the front wheels will handle reverse duties. Mm-hmm. So instantly my mind, being the adolescent that I am, is this a $1 million mid-engine hypercar that can spin front wheel drive donuts? Can I raise my hand and be the first person to volunteer to try? Because as somebody who has driven many, many, many a front wheel drive car, front wheel drive donuts are fun, man. It's just, you crank the wheel, you floor the gas, and you just make yourself and everybody in the car sick.
It's something I had never considered, but
theoretically, I'm the only one, right?
Well, yeah. Theoretically, yes. Theoretically, you're right. I guess I don't know because neither one of us have driven it, but
if just the front wheels,
yes, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if just the front wheels are, you know, they're going backwards for reverse, turn the wheel, floor the gas in reverse, and just keep that one inner back wheel in one spot and let the front just spin you all around. Yeah, buddy. That's all kinds of silly fun for me right there. I'm sure that wasn't what Aston Martin wanted me to take away from their announcement because they are doing all kinds of R&D and they are pulling heavily from Formula One, the aerodynamics. Well, first of all, they said 90% of like a lot of the technical development that's going on here is all simulation, with 10% being, you know, kind of practical exploration. That involves a lot of wind tunnel testing. They were talking about how they're working with the underbody of the car. That's where most of the downforce for this is going to come from, not with big wings on, you know, on the outside, but just how they're channeling airflow underneath the car.
Yep. That's the way I understand things too.
And they also bumped it along by saying, okay, we're drawing from Formula One on that, but we can also employ active aero, which you can't have to that degree in Formula One. So we're including active aero on this. They were talking about, you know, just exploring like little louvers in front of the rear wheels, that helps to channel air up, that basically helps suck the car down to the ground. I need to look at my story really quick because I can't remember exactly the amount of downforce they said it was going to have. It will generate over 1,322 pounds or 600 kilograms of downforce at 149 miles per hour. Obviously, you're not driving 149 miles an hour over to the store.
But a track, but yeah.
But come on, yeah. I mean, you're taking this to the track. If I were buying one of these, I would absolutely be enjoying it at the track.
Presumably, yeah.
And considering when you look at it, and I mean, yeah, hey, it looks like a mid-engine supercar, but it doesn't have all kinds of crazy wings or things on it, you know, like we see with, and this isn't a negative at all against Porsche. I think their GT3 cars are just amazing with the big wings back there. You don't have any of that. So there's so much just design and technical thought going into this that they're pulling from Formula One. I mean, that was really the big takeaway there. The interior, they said, they're pulling from ergonomics and Formula One to try to find the perfect combination of comfort with a nice driver focused position. There's a false floor up mm-hmm. at the pedals that elevates the heels while then the composite rear seat or the composite seat is angled back. So you're going to kind of sit like F1 style position to a degree with your feet.
Right. Have you ever seen, it's like a lounge chair where your feet are kind of,
yep.
If you can imagine your feet and your shoulders.
Your feet and shoulders are almost in line.
Exactly. Yep.
I don't think it's going to be that extreme because frankly, I'm not sure how comfortable that would be for a long time. I mean, F1 cars aren't known for comfort, right?
Yeah.
They're known for pulling 3 G's in a turn. You're not going to pull 3 G's in a turn with the Valhalla, but they're plugging in that kind of engineering. And that was really the takeaway here. They're spending a lot of time trying to pull it all together. You've got the electric motors spinning it backwards for front wheel drive donuts. Yay. And they also say, and I know that there was at least one person, I think in the comments of this story, talking about the fact that, okay, technically they don't even have a car on the road yet. They do say they will have a full road going prototype out by the end of this year.
Group FBC,
so they are making progress.
Good way of describing things. Think of laying in a bathtub with your feet up over the edge of the bathtub. And that's another good way of describing things. That is how a lot of if you think about endurance racers or Formula One drivers, that's mm-hmm. how they sit for those long periods of time. And it seems like it would be really uncomfortable, but they do it. So,
you're looking at not comfort, but performance. You're looking you know, being able to better position yourself in the car when you're taking and, you know, crazy high speed corners, pulling some larger G's. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be to that extreme in this car, but yeah, I mean, that's really the takeaway there. Plus, I mean, we got a lot of new images to look at. It certainly looks fantastic. I can't wait to see where it goes. And 999 are planned for production. Aston Martin says they are on track to have production and delivery start next year. Mm-hmm. It's certainly been a long time coming.
Very 2018.
Well, I mean 2019 from the first Valhalla announcement, but sure. they had what was it like? AM23 was just a weird prototype mock-up designation that they had going on for it. I mean things have certainly changed over the years. Obviously it was supposed to be a V6 to start, and then they went to the V8 hybrid system. All indications are it's going to be worth the wait, so I can't wait to see it. Now that they're selling DBXs and making good profits from their SUV, bring it on.
That's right.
More supercars.
So we're going to finish up here because we do actually have the time, because we're 52 minutes in and we had kind of saved this just in case. And for anyone listening and for anyone commenting, I want to ask you folks, how do you feel about us covering campers, RVs, motorhomes, whatever it is you kind of want to call them? Because in terms of motorone.com, we do very good traffic for these stories. But I've never quite understood whether you guys want to see this stuff. But this one is one that is kind of so far above the pale that I kind of want to share it with you, because this guy is obsessive, and
it's amazing. Let me set this up for you while you're pulling it up here, because please. this is something that I found, and I immediately thought, okay, we've got to write about this. I personally love the idea of stealth campers, things that look ordinary on the outside, and then you get inside and they're extraordinary.
Welcome to my channel, where I take you on tours of your.
And there we have the video intro.
Sorry, Smith. I had to.
This is that's all right. That's all right. This is a cargo trailer, and it still, for all intents and purposes, looks like a cargo trailer on the outside. Yeah. But then you open it up, and this guy has created an extraordinary, fantastic interior. And Bruce, I saw some of the video. I didn't get to see all of it. Can you tell us a little bit about this? Because this is his full-time home, correct? For a few years now.
Yeah, for a couple of years now, for like 2 years now. Yeah.
Okay.
And so again, like you said, it looks like from the outside, other than the window and the propane tanks, you would look at this and just think it's someone's cargo trailer. And at least in the U.S., and I understand we have readers or listeners from outside the United States, this is what kind of folks who, if you haul a lawnmower or, you know, stuff like that, this is what they use. It's a very, commonly seen thing.
A dual axle, a double axle, just utility trailer. I would expect to see mowers, Or it's like where I live, it would be a good rig for pulling like your quad runners or your motorcycles. And it does have that slanted front, that sometimes you can see with like snowmobile trailers, especially where you can open up one side and then put down an angled trailer and then you drive up on the back and then just drive straight off either side. So it looks like just a very normal utility trailer.
Yeah. This does not look out of place in a parking lot anywhere in the country, especially in at a Home Depot or a Lowe's or, any sort of place like that. But this guy has turned the inside into, I gotta say, one of the most impressive compact living spaces I've seen in a long, long time. So he bought the trailer. I don't know if you just saw it. He paid $8,500 for the trailer and then just spent his time customizing the interior. And this guy is a super skilled woodworker, clearly. He's got the snake that he has inside of it with LED lights. He's got a fake tree that's not wood, but it's fiberglass, but he ran lights up through it and then has LED lights going up through there. But still, he's got a kitchenette. He's got a shower.
Can you pause it right there? Can you pause the video right there? Yeah. Pause it right there.
Here, let me go back two spots here. And
because we need to spend a little bit of time looking at that, because I mean, for those listening on audio, if you're able, jump over to motorone.com and look at our
article. I don't even think this is the most impressive part.
If not, let me try to describe here. I mean, the outside is just a silver cargo trailer. Inside, yeah. I mean, he has wood planks on the top for the ceiling, wood planks on the side. We're looking at the kitchen area. There's just like a half moon shape where he has the cabinets installed, but makes a nice little arc. But the custom and just the custom woodworking that he's done, how he has animal shapes, everything engraved onto the cabinets. Like you were saying, Bruce, there's the kind of like the fake tree, but he's got like this is that wood or fiberglass? Did he carve that snake out of?
The fake tree is fiberglass, but not all of it is fiberglass, because I'm going to pull it up here.
Okay.
Hold on one second.
I mean the detail work is just insane.
So like,
I've never seen anything like this in a camper.
I gotta find it.
I've very seldom seen anything like this just anywhere.
The carvings that you'll see here on the left-hand side that kind of look like elk horns, I guess, or on the cabinets that look like tree timber or stuff like that, that was all done by hand by this guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't buy, I don't even know where the hell you would buy that if you could buy it, but it wasn't bought. He made all of it. And so it becomes this super impressive little living space. Like, here we go. I stopped it here for anyone watching on YouTube. The fake the deer head with the antlers, he hand carved all of that. And also, the stuff that's on the I lost my words. That stuff's up here. The little bits around the lower portion, like, that's all hand carved.
Just hand carved. And it looks fantastic. I mean, it's legit art. And then I love, but how underneath that you still have, it looks like the corrugated side of the trailer.
Yeah. Well, no, he added that too. That's not what the inside of the trailer looks like, because I had to look that up. The inside of these trailers are largely like kind of a plywood type thing. Okay. And so he bought corrugated steel.
And to make it sort of match the outside of the trailer.
Yes.
That's amazing. And this is his full-time home, where obviously we're looking at the kitchen here. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is there a queen size bed in the back? A queen size bed in the back. And I believe he also has there's a full bathroom on board with shower. Yes,
there is. Yeah. So his shower is a livestock feed bucket. essentially. And he says he can actually use it as a bath. Like he can, it's large enough that he can fill up with water and like bathe in it if he wants, or he can use it as a shower.
Just use it as a shower.
Where I paused it here is his, you know, bedroom. And underneath that, it's a raised bed. So he's got his clothes underneath, and then he's got the raised bed on top.
And then underneath, I mean, you have clothes, but it also works as almost like a little garage.
Yeah.
As well. So, yeah, I mean, when I saw this, I was gobsmacked at the interior, at just the work and the craftsmanship that's gone into the interior. We've seen a lot of custom built camper trailers, van conversions over many, many years that we've covered these. And each one is unique and impressive and special in its own way. But this one, this is in my new Mount Rushmore of custom camper builds.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, this guy is putting, there's so much hand work into this, like, you know, the hand carving, just the various aspects. Like we're going to see here in just a second, the lighting that he put in. So there's the red lighting and then the green lighting underneath that, which is kind of like trippy and fantastical, and just, you know, it's a really, really cool build, especially when you consider, I looked these up, he said he paid $8,500 for this little travel trailer. I looked up, I've seen them as low as like $5,000 in my area.
Oh yeah.
You know, it depends on where, obviously I'm not saying he overpaid, I'm just saying it depends on where you live, but this
it depends on the condition too. If you find a travel trailer that's kind of beat up on the outside, beat up on the inside, as long as the frame isn't all rotted out, you're going to be doing a conversion anyway, so you're probably ripping most of the guts out. You know, you can start pretty reasonably with one of these.
So yeah, it's just a really cool build, but. Again, and I've been putting this on here, so I haven't been looking at her comments, I'll be totally honest. I'm not sure if this is something that our frequent viewers want to see, because at least on the site, this sort of stuff gets just fantastic traffic. But if the folks who enjoy rambling about cars, they don't necessarily want to see, you know, this type of build, we won't talk about it again.
So far, we're
doing fantastic work. Anyway,
so far we're pretty much yay on talking about the cool stuff, whether it's cool campers, cool trailers, cool builds. And I got to share Group FBC's comment. I love the irony. It's all wood except for the actual tree, which is made out of fiberglass.
Yeah.
Astute observation.
He looked around to try to find a tree and just couldn't find one. So he had to make it himself, which makes sense because, yeah, you know, it's such a specific interior and such a specific design. But like the butterflies we're looking at here, the tree branches, those were all hand carved. He says that in the video, so I gotta believe him. But I don't know where the hell else you would buy one, so you know, that type of stuff is all, you know, hand done. It's a really cool build.
Very cool build. And
And so this guy lives in Boulder, Colorado, and I'll fast forward here. You can see an SUV right about here. He does have an SUV. He does not mention like pulling it around. He seems to like be really located in the Boulder area, but he could. It doesn't seem like there's any reason that you couldn't pull this to anywhere else in the country if you wanted to live somewhere else. It's just not, yeah, you know,
get on the road for a little while. And I mean, hey, a lot of people are doing the tiny home thing right now. You know, I've thought about it because we've covered these so much over the years. It looks cool and fun, and I think, just get on the road and go. I would be very frustrated in a very short amount of time because I have a lot of stuff.
It's not for me.
I like having most of the stuff that I have.
Yeah.
And I like to tinker on cars, and I like having a place to work. Trying to do that sort of thing in the parking lot of an auto parts store, I know is a traditional rite of passage for many car people, and I've done it, and I don't want to do it.
I'll
vehicles like, back to my house.
I've done the kiddie pool version of that, which is replacing my battery in a auto parts store when like the battery's damn near dead, and it's not for me. My anxiety, my stress levels, it's not for me. It's just not like
the biggest I've done unplanned was it an upper or lower radiator hose? I can't remember which one.
Okay.
But I popped a pretty good leak while dry. And this was when I was working with Ford, and it was about a 45 mile one way drive back to my house.
Oh boy.
And it popped as I was leaving, and it's like, okay, I got to get in somewhere. And I was in, it's around the Dearborn area, not far from Ford headquarters. And I get into an auto parts store and go in. They got a hose. Yep. Okay. Do you have some screwdrivers? Is really all I need. And then I needed a bunch of coolant. I was like, you got a bucket that I can put coolant in? And they had a bucket to put coolant in. And I did the swap there, and it was hot, and I was just dying of thirst afterwards. And I got it all patched up in about probably 20, 25 minutes. Hit the first fast food place I could find. I was just like, yeah, I just want a large Coke. It's like, deal with it? No, just a large Coke. It's like, yeah. I could have gone in somewhere and bought a 2-liter, but I smell like antifreeze. Just give me my large Coke. Unofficially, I've done things at car conventions like swap exhaust systems and things like that in a parking lot, but that's more partly for the fun of it, because there's a bunch of you around and it's like, okay, we're in the hotel parking lot. Hey, look, I just bought this high flow Y pipe. Well, let's put it on.
Exactly.
Give me a torch. Let's go for it. It's 2 a.m. I don't care. Woo.
But that's less out of necessity and more out of fun. Whereas, you know,
yeah. Well, I mean, I've been fortunate where I've never had huge repairs on the road, but I have helped others like engine swap one time at a convention where, okay, we were able to get the car back to somebody's house that lived nearby, and everybody kind of pitched in and helped out over the course of about 24 hours to do a quick engine swap so he could get back home.
So Smith, my wonderful mother has a question for you.
Your mother is a rambler? What?
Yes. What is the featured model this week?
That.
You can't see it. No, you got to show
that.
Put it up to the camera.
Is a 1959 Cadillac Eldorado Baritz convertible.
Not too shabby.
That is a true coupe. Actually a convertible, but.
Yeah.
If it were a hardtop, it'd be a coupe.
Okie doke. I think that's the show tonight. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Not really. I can say at this point, keep your eyes on MotorOne.com if you are interested in gaming and specifically racing games, because I will be doing a review.
Sometime in October, Smith is going to talk about a video game.
I can tell people.
Oh,
now,
okay.
I can tell people now that I have a review copy of Forza Motorsport for Xbox Series S, X, and on Steam. And I will be reviewing that and posting that in the very near future. I can't talk about any of my impressions right now, but I can say that.
You told me some specifics. I wasn't sure how much I was allowed to say.
I can say that. Yep, Forza Motorsports.
It exists.
That review game. That review is going to be coming very soon.
Yeah,
and one is playing it right now.
Very good. Yeah. So no impressions. It's just it is a video game that exists, and in the future you will be talking about it.
Group FBC, I was hoping for a review of Iron Man Ivan Stewart Super Off-Road. Once I have my new wiring in the basement here set up, I'm setting up my 80s room with the Nintendo, the old school NES. I will get a copy of Super Off-Road for Nintendo and review
Absolutely.
It just for you.
So,
and enjoy it.
Real quick, group of FBC, there was a super brief moment. And what I mean by super brief, a matter of days, where we were like pitching things of like various stories, and we were going to try to recreate Ivan Iron Man Stewart Super Off-Road. And this is years ago. It never happened. But there was a brief shining moment where you could have seen that on motor1.com, and it didn't happen. But
I don't remember that.
You don't?
No.
Sorry. Okay. It happened. Trust me.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember it, but it didn't end up. We were pitching it at some sort of like advertising or PR or something like that, and it didn't happen. But it would have been fantastic if it had.
Maybe I. Nope, still don't remember.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, I can see the smoke coming out of my head here as I'm trying.
Okie doke. I think that's our show for tonight. As always, we love everyone that listens to this show because we know, Smith and I, like, everyone has lives, and you have a million.
I just want to go on record.
That's not true because I have talked to you this week and you've had to deal with things that happen in your life. So that is a lot.
No, zero life.
That's not true. You know, we all have to deal with things. We all have other things to do. And so the fact that anyone listens to this show and gives us their time and gives us their comments and gives us their thoughts, it is so appreciated and it is so loved. And it makes me want to do this show every single week. And I love it so much. So thank you for everybody who decides to give us their time, and just thank you. And so, with that, I will say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, and goodbye for this evening, and we will see you next week.
Bye, everybody.